Hello there, everybody, and welcome back to the Grayscale Gorilla Podcast. Today, it's just me and Chad. What's going on, Chad?
Hey, not much. How's it going?
Not much. What are you talking about? It's been insane this last 2 weeks. Yeah.
That's just like my go-to response, I think. Yeah, a lot is going on.
Yes, too much. Too much is going on, but things are good. I'm super excited. Can we announce launch day now because of literally where it is? Mm-hmm. Okay, we are launching Signal beats per minute, Signal 1.5 technically. Mm-hmm. We are launching it tomorrow. So actually tomorrow being Tuesday, depending on when you're listening to this. So
Tuesday, June 27th to be exact.
I am super excited. I've been recording tutorials. We've been prepping imagery. We got a cool little spot we're putting together. And I have been obsessively using Signal, specifically BPM, for the last 2 weeks, just creating things and having fun and honestly trying to break it. And the one time I was able to break it, we went and fixed it. So like I'm super happy and excited about this version of Signal. It started out as something very tiny. It's gotten pretty big. So I think it's a huge update. And honestly, it's a huge update that I can't believe we are putting out as a free update.
Yeah, that's in retrospect. We've lost our minds. We're like Crazy Eddie down at the car lot. We've seriously lost our minds. It's a fantastic update. I think it's probably, I don't know. It's one of my most used GSG plugins for sure. And then this beats per minute thing, like I don't do a lot of music. And if you're one of those people like me, maybe you don't do a lot of VJ music stuff and you're wondering like, why would I find that useful? It's actually really useful even if you're not doing music because it allows you to create really complex animation patterns, whether or not you're using them to a track or not. And being able to see it in the sequencer that you guys made, it's really intuitive to kind of create these really complex loops and these little complex animations, which I love.
Yeah, so I'm super excited that we're going to be able to get this out in front of people. We'll probably be doing some live streams tomorrow, showing off all the features and some of our favorite things to do with it. And I can't get enough of this update. It's super cool.
It's so fun.
And let's see what else is going on.
We also got you should mention all the awesome artists that contributed really awesome animations for us too.
Yeah. No, yeah, we've got some scene files we're going to be giving out a little bit more down the road. And like, yeah, we've had a bunch of amazing beta testers, like super rocking it, finding the bugs, giving suggestions. We added tons of features based on feedback that they were giving. And they went and created a bunch of animation and even some music that we might be able to give away. So, super excited for that. So keep your eye out for that. Keep an eye out for your email in your email for the Signal update if you already own the older version of Signal. And if you know, even if you're super excited, you're listening to this, go pick up Signal today and you'll get your email tomorrow on the new version.
There you go. That's a good way to start a Tuesday.
Yeah, dude. And then let's see what else. We should probably mention that we are we're thinking about doing some more interview-based podcasts. So there might be a little bit of a shift in tone in the podcast where we can start inviting more industry leaders and people that we are inspired by and who have really good information and start picking their brains and seeing what they're all about.
Yeah, that's exciting. There's quite a few people that I hope I can pester enough to get them on the show.
Yes, we've already got a long list we are compiling of people we would like to talk to. So that should be an exciting thing. So
if there's somebody that out there that you guys would really love to hear more from, hit us up in the comments and let us know. We'll try to we'll try to round them up and get them on the show.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, that's a great thing. Definitely add a comment. Go jump onto the Grayscale Gorilla Connect on Slack and give us a comment there. Put it on the YouTube everywhere. We want to hear who you want to hear from. Let's see what else is going on. You've got you were talking a little bit about some rendering stuff.
Yeah, I am super stoked with how the Redshift alpha is going and have been doing a lot of really fun renders preparing for a new HDRI expansion pack that's going to be coming out. I can't even put a date to it soon. And so, yeah, I've been playing around with the new version and it's pretty rad. I got to say, if you're looking at GPU rendering or you're not really sure what you want to do in that space, check out Redshift. I'm pretty sure the alpha is still open. If you go to their forum and you make an account, I think it'll allow you to send an email to request to get on the alpha. I highly recommend it. It's people were asking me, well, what do you like about it better than, let's say, Arnold or Octane? And it's hard to describe because Octane has its own problems and its own benefits, really. But for me, it's got more problems than benefits, so I don't really use it as much. And Arnold is amazing features, like really awesome features, like do anything, create any sort of material you want, but you're still kind of tied down to the CPU speed, and it can be a little bit slow sometimes if you don't have a bunch of CPUs or you don't want to, let's say you're doing a print resolution type job. Where Redshift is really nice is that it's got pretty good features. Like I'd say it's getting there in terms of compared to Arnold, but it's also biased. So it can cheat. You can like maybe not use GI or maybe only use like a point cached GI or a radiance cached rather method rather if you don't need it to be a full, you know, movement, if it's just a print thing. So there's lots of ways you can cheat in Redshift, which I really love, and how fast it is. It's great. And it's got this like look to it that I really like. And some people have criticized the look of it, saying that it's not photoreal. I totally disagree. I think it's just all in how you use it. But I think that there's like a quality to it that I'm finding, especially with these metal renders that I've been doing, that is, I don't know, it's just got, it's got a really kind of sharp looking, just really kind of, I don't know, it's got some balls to it, the look of it, and it's hard to describe, but I've been really enjoying it, and it's just been fun, and it is kind of nice to be able to like tweak a shader and like see it update instantly and like render it in what used to take 10 minutes takes like a minute, and you start like all of a sudden I started like doing all my promo renders at like 4K because I could, and why not, and you know, it's cool, like being able to like just do that without any real consequences.
Yeah, those metal renders you've been pumping out the last week, where it's like, wow, that's crazy. Like, I mean, yeah. On two fronts, because first of all, you're using the upcoming metal pack for HDRI Studio and HDRI Link from Grayscale Gorilla, but that pack is already kind of quickly becoming my favorite because I've had kind of this beta version of it installed for a little bit. And like I'm doing my AskGSGs live, and like I'm opening up that one, and it's like, oh yeah, like this is a metal-y type of scene, so I'm gonna grab this. And people are like, oh, I don't have that one. I was like, I know.
Yeah, we've been sitting on that one for a while, only because, you know, I think we wanted to make sure that we didn't like just overload everything, and it was just kind of one of those things that I had wanted to do for a while and just never kind of did it. And then I built it, and then the release cycle didn't like line up with other stuff that we were trying to release, so we just kind of sat on it for a bit. But it is funny, like I've talked to a lot of people that will watch a stream or something, and they'll see that, like you, and they'll be like, hey, wait a minute, like I don't see that one on the site, and I don't see it in my library. And don't worry, you'll get it soon, and I can't wait to see what everybody does with it, because I'm telling you, man, it's becoming my favorite expansion pack that we've done. It kind of builds off the studios. If you use the studio pack, and I think it's called Pro. Is it called Pro Studios, right? Yeah. So if you ever use that one in your daily workflow or whatever, you're doing like product renders or whatnot, just imagine that one, but specifically for doing reflective metal type stuff, titles, products. A lot of my test renders that I've been doing, they're like a watch, like a faucet, like product viz type stuff. So well, I think it's gonna be good for that kind of stuff.
One of my favorite things, and the biggest contrast between maybe the regular studios and the pro studios and then the new metal one, is what's great is in almost every part of the image there's something to reflect. You got bright areas and dark areas, but there's not like these big dark patches, which often when you're doing something metallic, you caught that angle where you didn't quite reflect anything. It's just black over there, or it's just white over there, and just blows it out. Where here, there's like all these really nice soft transitions. So practically any angle, if you're doing something metallic and shiny, you're going to be getting a nice reflection of some sort.
Yep, that's exactly kind of the like when I made it, like that, that's a huge thing. Like when you're doing like metallic surfaces, let's say, I don't know, a watch or something, like you're doing a really pretty angle for a watch for a print ad. It's, you can't just do it with like your go-to studio HDRI, because a lot of times, like you said, it's like a really bright white card on one side, maybe another card on the top, and then like a black void. And when you throw that onto a metallic surface, it just, it looks weird because it's so contrasty and there's nothing in the black void, and you can't do that. And if you look at any, just go to like, go to a magazine, go pick up any magazine like Dwell or any magazine that has ads in it, which is every magazine, and just look for ads for jewelry or watches or cars or anything like that. And you'll notice that the reflections in those surfaces are almost never contrasty. They're always like little pockets of light and gradients and like falling off the black. Everywhere. And once you kind of see that and you're like, oh yeah, that's what it takes. You could totally do it by hand, you know, in Photoshop and painting weird stuff or and dropping in your scene, but this just makes it a hell of a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. That's the whole point for HDRI Studio and HDRI Link. Word. Just click through, find the ones you want to create. So let's see, is there any other kind of news type things? I think those are the main ones.
Should we talk about Transform or not? I don't know.
I mean, it's just it's a tiny thing. I guess if we actually follow through on our current plan, then a little later this week, maybe sometime next week, we're going to be doing a small Transform update with a bunch of new presets, a little bit of interface tweaking to make it a little bit more organized, maybe a bug fix here or there, but some more presets for people. We're trying to make it easier for us to add new presets. So
that's another one of those tools that I definitely, Griffy, go get that one because it's really pretty rad for doing animated type.
And it plays well with Signal.
That's true. That's
I didn't do it, and I probably should have. Maybe I can prep a file for tomorrow's live streams of playing with Transform and Signal. Because driving a Transform animation with some beats per minute would be really
cool. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you should. That actually does sound kind of perfect for tomorrow.
Yeah.
Do it.
Do it. Do it. Do it. Okay. I think that's everything as far as news. You want to set us up for the main topic of the day?
Sure. So we hit up our internal or not customer Slack channel called GSG Connect. If you are not a GSG customer, then go be one. Go buy something. Then you'll get access to this awesome Slack channel, which we use all the time to talk to our customers and answer questions and whatnot. And we have a channel in there dedicated to our podcast. And we got lots of great requests on topics today. And one kind of jumped out at me because it's something that I think everybody goes through in their career, which is, how do you explain the 3D process to either an art director that's never done 3D or a client that's never done 3D? And in a way that they understand what they're asking for, maybe hard or maybe easy, and so that you can have a better dialogue and go through your project in an easier way. You're not fighting this barrier, this language barrier between the two of you. So how do you handle that? Well, we don't know the answer. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm going to be leaning on you a little bit more on this one because you've lived in that production world. I can speak to it actually a little bit from an artist's.
Yeah, I mean, well, you had to deal with it because you worked in a place that you were the only guy, right? And so when they came to you, like if I was your art director and I came to you and I said, I'm trying to think of something, a request that would be outlandish. Hey, listen, that thing you made, it's completely different now. We've got, it's not going to be this kind of stage with this kind of set. It's going to be completely, it's going to be a round stage. It's what is not a square stage anymore.
Yeah.
How much time is that going to take and why?
Well, that's a bad example for me because I built all the tools. So that would literally be a checkbox for me, but
you're the absolute worst person to ask.
Worst to ask for that. But yeah, what was interesting in my job in my former life before I was doing grayscale gorilla stuff was I was doing production renders for doing pre-viz for like corporate scenic events. So like the way I always describe it the short way is like picture like the American Idol stage, kind of like the lights and the stage and the curtain and the decorations up on the stage. We didn't do that one specifically, but we did that type of stuff all the time for like Pepsi or for Gatorade or like, and a lot of it was for like all the executives were going to be flying in and they wanted this big production. And there's a lot of variation in it. We also did like trade show booths, but I was only at the company for like 6 months, less than a year, when the creative director, essentially, like the art director of the very small art department, quit. And he didn't get replaced. So what happened is that all the different project managers in this company, because the company itself did all the, they did the welding and the carpentry and shipping it. Like it was like a warehouse and a shop that would build these things. So the art department, which included like everybody doing CAD and art and graphics, it was like four people. But then the, you know, 50 other people were all, you know, using saws and welding and whatnot. But I had like six or seven different project managers that started coming to me directly for the renders. So there's nobody kind of telling, you know, like doing the interpretation. So they would come at me with exactly with what the client was saying, and I'd have to interpret what they said and then give them back renders.
You had no interpreter, which is...
Yeah, there's no interpreter whatsoever.
What a producer does, sort of.
Now, I guess, what, like, luckily, like, I'm not an artsy-fartsy kind of guy, and most of the producers were not either. So it was all... There was never... And this is actually a big question I'm going to have for you that we can maybe dovetail into a little bit later, but... Like a lot of that weird terminology of like, oh, make it sexier or make it more like the words that don't specifically mean something. It doesn't translate into, it's such an abstract concept, but we can get into that. But the point being is like, you do have people who come in and they just don't understand what they're looking at. I guess this goes with almost any kind of somewhat technical field, is you could so easily say a sentence that's like, oh, no problem, I can whip that out in 5 minutes. Or you change one word in that sentence, it's just as easy to say, and you're like, that's going to take a week. That's going to take a month. Like, are you crazy? This is insane. Like, how are we going to be able to produce that kind of thing?
Yeah, a lot of times they don't even know. It's just such a – there's no education with the clients or even some inexperienced art directors. So they don't know what they're asking for. They don't know if it's hard. They don't know if it's easy. They don't know – the terminology. So yeah, I mean, one tweak of a word can go from, oh yeah, that'll take me 10 minutes to, oh my God, are you crazy? This is never going to happen. And if you don't know how to steer the client or the art director through that situation, or the producer doesn't know how to kind of shepherd them, then it can make everybody miserable, just because you've got a team that thinks the client has got these wild expectations that will never happen, when in reality, what they really wanted was probably something really simple. Yes. But because nobody knew how to make that interpretation, they just take it at face value.
Yeah. You're talking past each other where they're
right.
Yeah.
The worst kind of feedback to get from a client is too prescriptive. It's when a client says, can this move over here a little bit and this move over there and maybe this is here? That is a red flag to me. It's when you want to have a conversation with your producer and try to figure out a way to get your client to give you feedback that actually matters. Like, well, okay, well, why do you want to move that? Like, what are you not getting from this? Mm-hmm. If you can get them to say, oh, I think it's boring, or I think it's not exciting enough,
yeah, or lacking energy, or
yeah, like those are the kinds of notes that you want to get, because then you can go back as an artist and figure out, okay, cool, so they think it's not an energetic enough at this part. Okay, then that's up to me as the artist to interpret what energy means in this piece. And is that a faster edit? Is it more camera moves? Is it faster animation? Is it music? Is it sound? Those are the decisions that you, the creative person, should be making, not them. So that's the kind of stuff that I try to like if you were my client, I would be like, okay, so what are you liking? What are you not liking? Well, you know, can you move this over here? I would try to ask you like, well, what is it that's lacking for you? Like, what do you wish it were doing? Or what do you wish you were feeling or getting from that? And then try to get them to explain it in that way. But most of the time, I've noticed, at least, when you think it's some crazy request that's like going to blow up your timeline, if you can just kind of get to the heart of what the issue is, it's a lot of times not as bad as you think.
Interesting. That's something that would have been useful to me back when I was doing that type of work, because I never thought about it in that way. And that would have been very helpful. For me, what often happened was a client wouldn't know what they want until they saw what they didn't want. Mm-hmm. So it was often a case of like, okay, we're going to slap their logo on this previous setup, you know, change it to their colors and send it to them. And now they can be like, okay, now I definitely know that I want something with some height and get rid of this and change that. So that was always pretty helpful, is like quickly give them something. And then they're like, oh, okay, now I know what we're talking about. And every once in a while they're like, whoa, that's crazy, I love it. Like, so you never know.
Yeah, but that's a really what you did there. That's kind of like what in the motion design, like commercial world, what we would do with like a board. You know, like we might send over, they might say, okay, and then we're going to pitch you guys on this job. Okay, cool. We'll send you over a deck, and that deck might have our take on what the project might be, and it'll have a ton of like reference collages of what we think the tone and look and feel of the piece would be. And that's kind of like what you did. And that at least it will set expectations and also kind of be a kind of a litmus test as to know like where their heads are at. Like, mm-hmm. Is this too much? Is this too little? Do they like this? Do they not like that? That gets honed down even further when you start doing boards and submitting stuff to the client for, you know, to win the job.
Yeah.
It's hard.
I wonder to what degree the creative director or the artist, whoever's dealing with this person who doesn't understand, like, if you think about it differently, a lot of the blame can maybe even go onto that person, onto like that producer or onto that artist. And I this is where I would even kind of blame myself in some of the stuff, that the client is coming to you because you're the one who knows how to do this kind of thing. And they like all the things that you naturally know in your head, like they don't know that stuff. I think there's a natural human tendency that you discount the information that you know well, and you assume everybody kind of knows it. Mm-hmm. Like I assume a basic knowledge of so many things that other people just don't have any concept of. Like I did one of those paint night things where you go in and you drink and you paint. And most of the people in the room did not know the most basic of color theory. Like they didn't know how to mix the color green from primaries. And you're just like, you assume that this is the baseline information that absolutely everybody knows. And I mean, and we're talking about the most basic stuff in our field, but like your average layman doesn't necessarily know that. And then a lot of the concepts we're actually thinking about are so much higher level than that. And so us making the assumption of like, wait, how do they not know what they want? Like, well, maybe in a lot of ways, maybe they shouldn't. And in a way that this actually, it was a hard learned lesson for me back in the day. I was always kind of trying to increase realism in the renders. Like I made these really, anything I could make fancier, I would make fancier. And at one point I started populating the crowd. Like I used to just have empty chairs. There's always chairs in every render, like big empty chairs. And I started populating them with 3D models of people. Like, so there's like full colored people, but they were low poly because, you know, I need to fill up potentially thousands of chairs. And the clients started coming back with like, oh, like, you know, okay, we love the stuff. Can you make it maybe a little bit more, you know, add a little bit more red in there, but can you add more women into the audience? Or can you make it look like they're more excited? Or can you do this? And it started turning into this nightmare of like micromanaging the crowd.
And that's hilarious.
At one point I was just doing some, and like, I'm not super artistic. And at one point I went and I took all the 3D models of all the people in the chairs and I deleted out the color channel and I just put a specular highlight. So it was a black silhouette of a person with a little highlight on the top of their head. And I never, ever got another request to like tweak the crowd.
Yeah.
I abstracted the crowd. It didn't call attention to itself. And now they filled it in with their imagination. But when I gave them something very specific, they were like, nope, tweak it. Nope, not this. No, wait, make it more excited. Can you put some people walking up and down the aisles? It's like, nope, just abstract it a little bit. And they're like, I get it. I can fill in my imagination. I don't need to worry about it any further. And man, did that like concept. It blew my mind. Like when I kind of looked back on it and thought about it, I was like, oh my God, like if I abstract it, it's less work for me. And yeah, they are happier.
That's awesome. Yeah, you basically learned the lesson of less is more.
Yeah.
That's the lesson on that. And that's a lesson that is really, really hard to learn, especially as you learn how to do more things and you want to do more in your work and put more in your work. You got to fight that urge, because sometimes less is more, and you have to be able to, and being an editor, being able to edit your own work. And I don't mean just like editing footage. I mean like edit your work, meaning, oh, I don't need this piece. I don't need that. This works. That doesn't work. And kind of objectively look at your own work before you present it to your client and be able to put yourself in their shoes, I think is a really important skill to learn, because once you do that and you're able to make those kinds of decisions and say, you know what, this is distracting them and it's distracting me because I've got 30 men and 20 women and the men are all wearing blue and the women are all wearing red. You know what? I don't need that. I just need silhouettes. I just need to make it feel like there's people there. So if like that type of instinctual, like, let me just pare this down and make it not the focus point of the piece, you're going to being able to do that for yourself as you go further and further in your career to all those people out there, is you're only going to get better at it. And you're only going to become a better artist because now I'd always tell this to my guys that work for me. I wanted them to kind of play the client before they show it to themselves before they show me. Because by the time they show me, it should have gone through 5 edits of their own before they thought it was ready to show me. And so if I ever went to somebody's desk and I saw some really blatant shit that was like wrong or like could have been better, I would be like, is this real? Is this what you consider to be ready? Is this what you think is good? And a lot of times they'd be like, I should have done this and I could probably make this better and I didn't do that. And I'm like, cool, man. Now you know. Next time, bring it to me when you've done all the edits that you think are necessary. Because that's how you get them, how you groom new creative directors, is like you start to make them self-evaluate in a way that they need to take a step away from their work, look at it with fresh eyes and say, that sucks, that's good, that's got to be moved, that's no good. You know, like if they can do that, then it makes the creative director's job easier because they've already gone through their internal filter and you're not just looking at a spew of what they just happened to get done that day.
Tell me if this phenomenon is familiar to you. And this actually applies across the board for anything you create. And I usually create broadly in like a tweet or writing an email all the way up through doing your masterpiece render or sculpture or whatever. When you write an email, the instant you hit send, your eyeball will instantly see a typo or something you missaid or something you spelled wrong, where it's like the instant... That's almost like a forced mechanical moment where your brain is suddenly like, oh, that's been sent now. Wait, how are they going to view it? Where you've been then forced to, it's a mechanical way where, yeah, you've been put into their shoes and they can see it through those eyes. Because when you're working on something, you can get like, I don't know what the right word would be, but almost like a creative blindness. Where you're like, oh, this is cool. This is working. I'm doing this. And then you look at it the next day or you look at it a week later. You're like, ooh, like, the thing I thought was the greatest thing I've ever made is not at all. And the instant you grab somebody and have them stand over your shoulder and they're looking at it while you're looking at it, you're like, oh, wait, how are they viewing this?
Oh, yeah, that changes
like,
everything.
Like they stand there and you it's almost like you want somebody to come over, look at it for a second, and you're looking at it and you say, don't say anything. Just go away. Thank you. You did your job because now I just saw it through your imaginary eyes and I have to fix this before you say anything.
Yeah, you got to do that, man. In fact, I would say that you got to flex that muscle more and you got to almost like...
I'm talking about ways that I was forced to do it, but you want to be able to turn that on and off yourself.
Yeah.
But also on Google, if you're sending an email, there's a button you can turn on that won't actually send the email for like 5 seconds. And I literally every time I hit send, I hit undo and then fix something and then send it again. So
that's So for me, for the email thing, I hate email so much that when I do have to write more than a sentence back, it's like a chore. And I use Inbox because it has the auto respond feature. Do you ever use that before?
No.
So Google Inbox has this feature where it'll start to learn how you typically respond to things. And it'll give you three options. Like if you were to email me today, like, hey, what are you doing later? Do you want to go to lunch? It would give me three responses. Yes, no, maybe next week. And I could literally just click one of those responses and it would send it. And it's fantastic. It saved me a ton of time, but it's not, obviously not going to work for everything. So, and I'm terrible at English. Like I'm like, I don't know how the public school system failed me so miserably, but I only in the last 5 years sort of understand the English language and how it's supposed to be written. And that's it's only because I use this website called Grammarly. Now, Grammarly, for those of you that don't know, it's a website where you can type in it, and it, if you pay for the pro version, it'll make your writing better. It like gives you suggestions like, oh, you're writing in a more too passive of a voice. You've already used this word three times. You might want to consider this punctuation. And just using that over the past, I don't know, I think I've been using it about a year, I feel like I'm able to write better because now this is going to sound really corny, but I never really understood how to use the written language to convey my point, because I'd always make it through visuals or I'd make it through verbally telling somebody. But the ability to like convey an idea through the written word and like in a way that is really easy for everyone to understand is really hard for me. So I use this website and I write down, it has a little, it's like a document website thing. Like you can write in their little editor and it'll tell you what's wrong. And then you just copy it and paste it into your email. So I try to do all my important, like this, I need someone to understand what I'm talking about here. I do it in there because then I know it's going to at least go through some sort of filter where it doesn't sound like a 5-year-old wrote it. And it's helped me a lot. Anyway, but I told, you know, I actually, when my kids are old enough to start writing papers, I'm going to get them accounts on it too, because it's got some really rad features of like, it'll like do plagiarism checking. So like if you start to write something that's a little too similar to something that you read in a book, it'll like warn you. It's pretty interesting. Anyway, the written word, man, when it comes down to conversing with clients though, like that's really important to be able to make your point and have them understand what you're saying in an email. As much as I hate email, those are still important ways of communicating with people.
I'm amazed at how much email has gone away thanks to stuff like Slack.
Mm-hmm.
Like instead of all these emails piling up, it's very instant. It's almost like what, like everybody's got their cell phones, but it's almost like people stopped calling each other and they started texting tons of information. Like if you're gonna do a phone call, you're gonna do a real phone call. But if it's a quick little thing, send a text, to the point where it's like rude to call somebody for a minor thing. If you're gonna check at what time you guys are meeting up, you do not call, you send a text. And I like that social transition of like, why are you wasting both of our time? Why didn't you send a text?
That's really hard. Like, it's hard for you're absolutely right. The people that don't seem to kind of understand that are my parents. why don't you ever answer the phone? Why don't you ever answer the phone? We can't get you on the phone. It's like, just text me. Like, I'm doing a million things. I don't have time to like talk for 25, 30 minutes. But if you text me, I'll get back to you right away. But that is a generational thing, you know, like they would never. They just don't think about it that way. They still think, oh, I need to find out what time we need to meet for dinner. Let me call them.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Sometimes. But then it takes 5 minutes of them saying goodbye for the real goodbye to actually happen. You're like, I need to do something.
So we've become so time obsessed that, yeah, it's weird, right? Because we used to do a lot more phone calls. We used to think about back before cell phones. How the hell did any of us even make plans to get together? Like
calling house phones, man.
Yeah, you just like hope they answer and be like, "Hey, what are you doing? You want to go see a show?"
We made it work somehow.
I know, right? It's definitely a lot easier now. That's for sure.
So maybe we should pull this back to the topic specifically a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, got a little off track. That's okay.
What happens? What is the topic specifically?
You already forgot the topic?
Yeah, we were so off track. I'm lost on what the original was.
Dealing with how do you deal with clients or coworkers that don't understand the 3D process, and sometimes they'll ask for things or have demands or just not know what they're asking for, and if it's hard or easy. And I have a story that I'll share that might help people in this regard. I was at DK, and we were trying to convince a client to go fully CG on a specific project that they were bringing to us that they thought might have been like a live action hybrid 3D live action. And this was a direct to, oh no, I take that back. This was through an agency, but it was an agency that did very little CG and a client that has never done CG. So we knew right away that we were going to have to educate both the agency and the client about what 3D is and how it works. So our producer really stressed this. And so he encouraged us to make a presentation, like a slideshow presentation about the process of 3D and what it is, and case study a previous job in its entire stages of development. And then we invited the client to our office, where the agency and the client came in, and we all sat at a big conference table. And we fired up this presentation where I walked through the previous job that was kind of similar to their job, but not exactly, obviously. And just kind of said, okay, this is how it started. It started with a storyboard. And I clicked, you know, showed them the storyboard. And once we got the board approved from the client, it went into previs, and here's what the previs look like. And you, just so you know, everything's going to be gray, everything's going to look like crap, and it's all temporary. Just think about it as like a sketch. And I walked through the entire process, and then we'll have the first review, and where you'll give us feedback on timing, on animation, on speed, on camera, on things like this. And meanwhile, you will have approved this asset and this asset and this asset. And if all of this happens on schedule, then you'll see a final version with, you know, 30% final assets at this time. And then as things start, and I would explain this curve, and there was always a curve, right, with this thing where in the beginning of this job, everything's going to look like crap. And things are going to continue to look like crap for a while. And then towards the end of the job, things are going to magically start to look better and better and better until every update you see is going to be almost final. And that's kind of the curve of how these things go. And if you just kind of take their hand in a non-condescending way and just kind of lead them through this and say, here's what to expect, then there's no surprises when you are a month into the project and they decide to change something that's catastrophic. You can go back and say, we can absolutely make that change for you. And that's always the beginning. It's always the beginning answer. Is yes is always the start of the answer. But just so you know, we already had that approved three weeks ago, and it's already been 2 weeks into production using that asset. So that would mean we can do it, but we're going to have to push our deadline this many weeks, and it's going to cost you this much money extra. And if you can present, and they know these things ahead of time, then they can't throw out, well, you never told me that. You never told me I couldn't change this. You never said that. If you clearly lay out these ground rules in the beginning and the expectations are set and schedules are made, then you always have that to go back to. It can be like, you know, we can absolutely do that for you. In fact, we can do it for you starting tomorrow. But just know it's going to impact your deadline. It's also going to impact your budget. So it's going to be an overage. And that you'll find that 9 out of 10 agencies, clients, whoever, are when you treat them that way and you're honest with them about it and you give them the option to do it and you lay out the cost, you'll get a really honest response. Like, how badly did they really need that change? Or are they willing to eat the cost, eat the time? And most of the time, big changes towards the end of productions will go away if you've built a relationship at the beginning that is fair and makes sense.
Well, you've also got that the magic words of that's going to cost more money. It's amazing how many changes will disappear when that
phrase is uttered. Yep.
It's like, oh, we're paying for this now?
Wait, this costs money? What are you talking about? I thought you guys did this for the love of the game.
Well, I mean, you always have those additional problems where you have effectively a middleman who just needs to put their fingerprints on it somewhere. So it's like, oh, do this thing. And it's like, it's not really a thing that we're doing. Or it gets one level up in management to who you're delivering to, and they want it back the way it had been. So,
oh yeah, that always happens, dude. Always. Let's go back to how it was. Or you use the red herring. You ever do that trick before?
The red herring? No, I don't think so.
You don't know the red herring trick, dude? Oh my gosh, this is the best trick ever. And I tell you, it's saved me a few times. So
okay, I'm excited.
The red herring trick is not for everybody. It's for the bold. And what you do is when you have an important milestone or check-in with your client, and you really like the way it looks and you really think it's the right direction and you're really like nervous that they're going to fuck it up in some way, you put something in there that's blatantly wrong. That's easy to check. You put in a red herring and you make it subtle enough where it doesn't look like a red herring, but it looks like something that needs to be fixed. So it gives them something to focus on. That they feel like they're doing their due diligence and doing their job as a client and, you know, they're getting their money's worth or whatever feelings that they need to satisfy. But what it's usually something simple, like an obvious edit that doesn't feel right, or the position of something is slightly off, or the motion.
A guy in a bear suit walks through the scene.
Exactly. Like some, I don't know about that. That might be too much of a red herring. But yeah, I mean, doing little something like that and what that does is they're just like, okay, well, you got to fix that thing, right? I mean, that's got to be fixed. And you'd be like, oh yeah, good call. We'll catch that. You know, good catch. We'll fix that. And yeah, so that anything else? And they're like, well, you know, they're just so stoked and like relieved that red herring is going to be fixed that most of the other changes are either ignored or maybe don't happen at all. But yeah, sometimes those can work against you in some situations, but most of the time,
they love it. They love this terrible thing.
Here's the trick. If they don't like you sit, like you have the red herring in the shot and then you show it to them. And if they don't call it out and you think, oh my God, they're not going to call out the red herring, like the red herring is going to make it in, then you call it out. You say, oh, and don't worry. We're aware of this, you know, person in the bear suit running through the shot. We're going to fix that for you. Don't worry about that. And then they're like, oh, then it's like a double win because they think that you're on top of it and like you're looking out for them.
It's pretty, pretty bold gambit you got here.
It is, man. But that's production, man. That's the fun.
Yeah. Have you ever had somebody who's really like fiddling with every single pixel and you send them back the same render a second time saying like, oh yeah, we went through and like I tweaked the colors and like higher, you know, like we did this and this exact same render from last week. And like, oh, okay, cool. And it's like, see all those stupid changes you're asking for. You don't even know what you're asking for, like, because you're happy with the thing I said I did the work on.
I've done that with internal creative directors, but never a client. I think I've done it. It's come pretty close, like where the changes are so subtle that you literally they couldn't tell the difference between version A and version B. Never with a still, because it's always that fear that they're going to bring it into Photoshop and like
overlay it.
Yeah, like overlay it and like call you out. And then you'd be like, oh, I think we sent you the wrong one.
Yeah, we just said, oops, like let me grab the new one.
Yeah, but no, I've done that with edits before where they're like, you know, I've had that happen where the agency has told us not to change anything, but just send their client the same thing and tell them that it's been updated, and then they'll be like, yes, this is what we're talking about. Perfect. Yeah. So yeah, it happens. It happens a lot more than probably a lot of people realize. I don't think clients realize half the shit that goes down in production on their behalf.
Well, they don't realize the crazy requests that they're necessarily making, or how it's contradictory to what they said last week, and that, you know, it will be contradictory to next week.
That's always the worst, when you have the flip floppers that are just like all over the map. Actually, the worst kind of clients are like the I got to prove myself to my superior, either at an agency or at a direct client, like somebody who's trying to climb the ladder. Those are the worst clients, because they're only out to serve their own ladder climbing ego, or whatever it is, their goals. They're not out to make the best piece possible or serve the client or, you know, push this product or agenda or whatever forward. They're only interested in themselves and making themselves look better. And those are the worst kinds of clients to get, because those are the kind that will come at you with absolutely no reason for the change and no way to talk them out of it, because they're like a wild card. You can't really predict. They suck. But the best kind, I think, are probably the best kind are the ones that kind of respect what you do enough to get out of your way, but also will rein you back in if you start to go off the rails and start to maybe do more than you even need to. I've worked with a couple clients that are awesome like that, and it's those are the kind of clients that you want to like keep around and nurture and make sure you're cool with, because when they bring you consistent work and they let you kind of do your own thing, that's really rare. Really, really rare.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the whole, just educate the people, man. Educate your clients. Educate your creative director. Tell them, you don't have to get into the nitty gritty of like what a render, like what GI is or anything like that, but just kind of lay it out for them in terms that they understand as to what's hard and what's easy. I think that alone is like a good thing to tell people, like, okay, just so you know, it's easy for me to just change the color of that thing because it's just a knob. I just turn it and it changes the color. It's really hard to add a clasp to this whatever object that requires me to go back and remodel the whole thing. And sometimes people don't understand. They're like, well, why is it easy to change a color and it's hard to add a clasp? Isn't it all just in the computer?
Yeah.
And like, they don't get that. So you have to say to them, well, to change a color, it's really easy. It's like changing a color on your phone, like the background. But what you're asking me to do in adding this object is I have to go and build that. Like I have to go sculpt it out of thin air. And create it and texture it and light it and make sure it's proper, going to work properly.
Match it to the rig. Yeah.
Yeah. What I remember working with a producer who had this way of like, I think it was a she. She equated everything to building a house, like so that the client could understand kind of what part of the process we were in. So everything she just would say, well, we're at the beginning. So it's like we're building the foundation for your house. And so if you kind of give people something like that to grab onto, then it's a little bit easier to say when they're like, well, hey, can we add that thing to that object? And it's like, well, we've already put up the drywall and the floors are done. And now you want us to go and change the wiring? Like that's not how this works. But putting it in a way, like kind of explaining it to them in a way that's more relatable, I think it helps them understand what part of the process they're in and when it's okay to make foundational changes and when it's not.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good metaphor for the whole thing, where it's like, okay, like you want us to go change. Yeah, this is like changing the wiring. We're going to have to go knock the walls out. Like you're going to have to pay for the walls again because we have to knock them out.
And that's something that most people will understand is like, wow, like, yeah, that's huge, man. That's like, what? Like, and if they change the fundamental concept, it's like, okay, now you're stripping it down to the foundation. Now we're going to throw away all that work.
We're
that
bulldozing
we did.
It and yeah, starting exactly. From scratch. Like, this is so, a new project now.
I thought that was pretty cool that she did that because it really did. Like, you could see the light bulbs go off in the client's face where they were like, oh, that's why we can't do that. And she would say, okay, well, now we're at the finishing stages where we're painting the walls and we're decorating. So what do you want to do at that level? Well, okay, cool. Can we add a little bit more glow on this thing? Oh, yeah, yeah, we can because we're at that stage. So it was a good way to keep them, you know, I guess in tune with where we were in production and knowing when they could ask for what changes and throw a couple red herrings in there. It's always good for good measure. Oh man, there were some crazy ones, let me tell you.
Yeah, client stories are always fun, but
I wish I could tell them.
Yeah, you have to abstract it and change the names, redact all the stuff, exactly. Pixelate their faces.
Mm-hmm. What was the worst job you ever did?
I can't get into the specifics because it was always clients. There was like at that company, we had clients that would come around and we'd do a project for them like every year or multiple times a year. And it would be like, oh, it's this client again. Like, everybody get ready. We're going to have to deal with this. So I can't get more specific than that.
Well, you're a lucky man then, because I've had some real pieces of crap in my career that I wish I could erase. They were so bad. I had this one job. This is long, long time ago, probably like 97, 98, somewhere in there. It was, this was back before, like when I was a low man on the totem pole and jobs just kind of like landed on my desk. And then you were just like, had to deal with it. You know, there wasn't like pitching and there wasn't finding the best way to do whatever. It was, I worked at a pretty big place and jobs just plopped on your desk and you had to figure out a way to do it. And one of them was this corporate video for a telecom company that's no longer around. And it was the worst concept I'd ever heard. So the whole idea behind this video was going to be an animated detective kind of character who is getting a tour of this telecom company and getting the scoop on all of their new technology. And he was kind of like this, I don't know, like, you know, the noir detective with the fedora and all that sort of thing going on. And I remember this showing up at my desk and I'm like, why is this dude animated? Why don't they just get an actor? And like, because they were already shooting like this entire, they were already shooting this entire thing. And they're like, no, the client really wants this animated character. And I'm like, how are we going to do this? This is crazy. And the deadline was like insane. And the owner of the shop had talked to the client and said, you know, you got to use motion capture because he just spent like all this money on this motion capture system. And it was a horrible motion capture system. It was magnetic. Have you ever seen those before?
No.
This
is 20-year-old motion capture technology, yeah.
The first motion capture technology was actually magnetic. So it was a suit you put on, and you had little sensors on all your joints that had wires on them. So all the wires were like, had to be wrangled and strapped, and then like the wires would get connected to this SGI. And then the whole thing would have to be calibrated. The person would have to stand really still in the T pose for long periods of time.
The suit, this was all about like tension on the string, not like capturing from a visual standpoint?
No, it's not a visual capture at all. It's all magnetic. It's actually somehow sending out and receiving information magnetically. So
it's counting on like it accurately saying like, oh, the arm, the elbow just rotated 45 degrees. Like that's what we think it is, instead of being like a point in space. That's crazy to even think about.
It was, it did not work well. Let me just tell you that right now. It was like not a good idea. So so the dude bought this thing and it was super expensive. It was like, I want to say it was like $250,000 or something. And it ended up in this room and none of us wanted to use it because it was such a pain in the ass. Like it was a huge pain in the ass to like get it set up and get it calibrated. And then the data was always crummy and it was just horrible to work with. Well, I'll never forget this. This is going off topic of that job, but I they wanted me to use it for this job. Anyway, long story short for this thing, funny story. We could not calibrate this thing. It would never calibrate. We'd get somebody, we'd get an intern to like put on the suit, which was always like super creepy to like ask an intern to get into this like skin tight suit with a bunch of wires and a bunch of nerds ogling at them, like trying to like, here, put your arm over here. And so, it would never calibrate right. Like get them all set up in the suit, then the arm would like just go wonked out, like to start flipping around, and we would just like throw our hands up and be like, "This is a goddamn it! This thing is sucks. I hate this thing." And it wasn't until like 5 years later that he was selling. He decided to sell it or something like that. And so somebody came in to look at it, and they were like, "Wait!" They looked at the system in the room, and it was right across the hall from us. And they looked at it and they're like, "Well, you guys don't use this thing in here, do you?" And we were like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Why the hell do you do that?" And we're like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "This is a magnetic system. That wall right there, that's an elevator shaft. It's completely made of metal." Like, you know what? It's like, you can't use this in here. I'm like, "Are you kidding me? We've been like killing ourselves for 3 years trying to get this system to work." And the entire time, it was just because it was in this room that was next to this elevator shaft. Oh, my God, dude. That was the worst. Anyway, so that job ends up being like a horrible, horrible mess. And one of the worst things I've ever worked on in my entire career, this character, we didn't have time to like do articulated like mouths at that point. So they were like decal stickers that would like, you know, do basic phonemes.
Yeah.
And I did a lot of tricks where the character would be like reading a newspaper, so it would be like in front of his mouth, so he didn't have to do the lip sync. Oh my God. Yeah, that was so bad, dude. So bad. It was funny though. I should try to dig that up. Actually, no, I won't. I don't ever want to see that thing ever again. But that's what happens, man.
Yeah. I mean, luckily I got to do a lot of my work was within a very specific box. So the stuff didn't get too crazy. And some of the crazy stuff was some of the more fun stuff, but we didn't have to deal with that. Like there's one point where there's like this giant 3D model of this crazy tree that we had to make. So they brought in this real life model and we actually 3D scanned it. And that was like a super unique thing for us to do at that company. And I get this giant data cloud and it's just like useless. So it's like I modeled a new thing on top of it. Like,
don't you love it when you get stuff where they're like the client's excited and they're like, "Oh, we got to this asset, man! It's gonna help you out a ton," and then you're like, "Nah, we're just gonna rebuild it." Yeah, that always happens, dude. They're always like, "Oh yeah, we got the CAD data. It shouldn't be a problem. You shouldn't have to worry about modeling it." And then you're looking at the CAD data and it's completely unusable, and you're like, "No, we're gonna have to retop that," and that's gonna be a week.
It was like an everyday occurrence of like, "Oh, you got to send me the graphic for it. Like, it's got to be this resolution." And then you're like, whatever, it needs to be 2000 by 2000. And then they send you a 2000 by 2000 image that was a 20 pixel by 20 pixel image stretched out to that size. And you're like, that doesn't count.
Yep. I can remember like doing so many products that you'd say, "Okay, we need the Illustrator file that you use to print this package." And that back and forth between the agency, the design firm that did the package art, your producer, and you was like a 2 week of sending crap back and forth. "No, you don't understand. Like, we need the Illustrator file that was used.
Vector. You can't vector put the JPEG. Art. You can't put the JPEG in the Illustrator and save it.
That's yes. not what oh we're my God.
About. And that comes for people who should know better. It's like, okay, who's being lazy over there, or what terrible intern did you get that thought they're going to get away with this? Because you know this isn't acceptable.
Yeah, dude. That that was hard for a long time until eventually I started to see less and less and less of that, because I think it became, as Adobe products became more and more widely known, it became less of an issue. People just sort of understood. But man, in the beginning, dude, like, yeah, you'd get some JPEGs, you'd get like some whacked out stuff. And it was always just like pulling hair to get the right stuff from these people. That was always a mess. Have you ever had, I remember one time we had to hand our assets over to another studio. This was a long time ago. I won't say the place I was at the time. But we made something, and a studio that was like our rival got the next round. And so the client like asked us to send over our assets, which is now like not a big deal at all. Like people do it. Oh, you need the asset? Fine. That's cool. I'll send it over. But way back then, like when there wasn't a lot of that going on, there was a lot more like competition. Like you were really mad that the studio got it and
very
whatnot.
Protective of your
yeah,
assets.
Yeah, you're super protective of your assets and like how you set things up. So I remember we used to tessellate them to the point where you couldn't even open them and then like send them over like that, like just like just crazy stupid stuff like that. Or
like
we
a
10,000
poly model, you turn into like a 10 million poly model.
Exactly.
There you go.
Exactly.
Here's what we're using.
Here's what we used. Yep. And if you can't handle it, man, your machines must suck, you know? Or you'd like make it, you'd scale it down so it's like 0.001 millimeter big.
And meanwhile, they're like, man, this studio is terrible. They don't know what they're doing at all.
That's really probably what they thought, but we thought we were being funny or clever or whatever. But yeah, they probably all thought we were a bunch of idiots. But yeah, that's always fun. Or I hate when, actually, I kind of don't like it when they ask for assets and then, you know, you're forced to kind of like explain to them, well, okay, but I used this renderer, I use this, you know, thing and that thing. And it does kind of become a pain if they don't use the same stuff. And you got to like
the various plugins and assets and textures and in-house tools. Like it just can become, that can become total nightmare.
We did have a lot of in-house stuff too at DK that we just couldn't share, that were proprietary stuff that we had built, like scripts and whatnot.
Yeah. And then it turns into like, you have to somehow like bake this out now for them. And that's mm-hmm. like a huge ordeal. It's like, okay, I know you want this asset, but now it's going to take who knows how long on our end to prepare it for you.
Yep. Yeah. That, and then do you charge them or, you know, like how does that work? You know, it's like a navigating that situation is always hard too.
You see, I'm noticing though, without Nick here, we're going down this path of all these client horror stories, and there's not like cheerful Nick to be like, oh yeah, but there's all this fun thing.
Well, sometimes shit's just real. That's how it is.
Well,
I'm sure somebody out there probably got, I'm sure there's some, we had some funny stories. We weren't all negative.
Yeah.
We had some good positive tips. The red herring tip, it's going to save somebody.
I was trying really hard to find, when I went to SIGGRAPH a few years ago, there's this really amazing, like, what is 3D animation video? Where it's kind of like in the old-timey explainer video style. I've been trying to find it, and I just cannot find it anywhere. I just don't know the right words to find it.
Oh, that would be amazing.
I wanted to link to it, but it was really good. And it was almost like, it was very, like, kind of stentorian, and they were, but it's not like talking down to the client, but it's the kind of thing you should send your client. Where it's like right on the line of like, do you think I'm an idiot? But also like, oh, this is actually really informative.
Sure, yeah. Hey, at least then make like get a receipt that they've like read it, you know, like watched it.
I sent you the video. That means you agreed.
You are aware. Oh, off topic though. I forgot to ask you, what's the latest with the iPad Pro, man? How are you liking it?
Oh, it's pretty great. Actually, I've been using it a bunch. I've been mostly updating my older apps and just getting it working in sync. I have the pen. I haven't opened up a drawing program yet to play with it. It's such a huge improvement over the old one. like, I can't even, like, just the speed alone, and the screen is gorgeous, and I got that new camera, and I've been taking all these photos, and based on your recommendation, I've been syncing the photos onto Google Photo, and I've been, like, reviewing the photos on the iPad, and they just look amazing on there. I've been thoroughly enjoying it. Like, the biggest thing for me has been I updated the YouTube app, and the YouTube app on the iPad sucks. I don't know what it is about it.
Really?
It sucks. Like, it's not playing back properly. And this is in the context of if I open up Chrome and play YouTube video, it plays through perfectly. If I open it up in the app, it starts getting choppy and it doesn't.
That's like, really weird. Do you think it's sabotage?
But the iPhone app works great. Like in the iPhone app, you can double tap and it'll jump forward 10 seconds. You can't do that in the iPad version. Like, in the subscription, I was like scrolling down my subscriptions to get to some videos I hadn't seen, and it would only load like four pages until it was like, nope, you hit the bottom, sorry. And I jump into Google Chrome and it goes all the way. It's like, what the hey?
That sucks, because that's really kind of one of the main things I would use it for if I got one, I think, is YouTube.
Yeah, well, I've just started using YouTube in Chrome. Like, another thing I often do is I'll put a video on and just listen to the audio as I like fall asleep, and I turn the screen off to listen to it, and you can do that on the phone easily. You know, and I have the YouTube Pro account, or whatever they call it, YouTube Red. So you can do that. But on the iPad app, if you turn off the screen, it just stops playing. But if you're in Chrome, you can keep the audio playing with the screen off. It's like, what's going on here? Like, everything I like about YouTube is not available on the iPad. I don't understand.
Do you think it's because they just need to update the app, or do you think they're really trying to is Apple trying to make it a bad experience because they make competing products? Or
I would think that as a theory, except that the iPhone app works perfectly fine and it still works in Google Chrome. So if Google was trying to screw over Apple, they're not doing it very uniformly. So I don't know, maybe their iPad team just needs to get a kick in the butt.
I'm sure also too, they probably need to they need to update the app. Is it the same app for the iPad as it is for the iPhone?
I don't think so. There's some fundamentally different functions. It doesn't feel like the same app, like with the menu scaled up. It feels like it's a slightly different.
They probably just need to update it then.
Yeah. But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
I heard there's some pretty rad drawing apps though. If you get,
yeah, I have to check those out. I'm just not I'm in a work on Signal and take photos zone, and I just don't have time to play with drawing apps right now, but I will eventually.
Well, let me know how that goes, man, because I'm definitely still thinking about it. Eventually getting one of those. They look pretty rad. And I definitely need my iPad is so old. Needs a refresh. Yeah. Well, all right. I think we're about ready to wrap it up. You want to wrap it up?
I think we're all good. I don't even know if there's anything else to say. So thanks for listening, everybody. Make sure to tune in next week for another Grayscale Gorilla podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow us in all the places where the podcast is. I don't even know all the places. Where is it? Google Play and
iTunes Google Store. Play on our website. I think if you just like search for it, just Google it, you'll find it in other places too. There's not some other place that it popped up, but yeah, all the usual.
And definitely spot. YouTube to check out notes. I think there's only one note for today though, but yeah, that should do it. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week. Bye bye.
Bye, everybody.